Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your hybrid episode, a Cognizant recap, a DFS preview for this week's Arnold Palmer Invitational. And joining me to break it all down, it's Greg Ducharme. Hey, Greg.
Rick. Quite a week, and it extended a long week here on the PGA Tour with a nice Monday finish today. And there was some great play out there between yesterday and today.
A little bit of overtime, a Monday finish. So let's jump right into that, because if you're watching live, it's Monday afternoon. So we had the conclusion of the Cognizant this morning. And then, of course, we're rolling right into Arnold Palmer Invitational Week. But let's look back quickly, Greg, before we look forward. It ended up being a 3-shot victory for Austin Ekeroat, who went 65, 67, 68, 67. And it didn't always look like it was going to be his. More on that in just 1 second. But he really was stoic coming down the stretch. He made the bear trap look more like a cub track. And it was an impressive Monday to get this thing closed out.
Austin Ekeroat was just phenomenal. And look, this is a player on the PGA Tour in his second year who has excelled at every level of golf. I mean, he was at Oklahoma State, was a 4-time All-American. And so he doesn't have the name recognition right now on the PGA Tour, but this guy can flat out play. You know, I was looking at this too, and I talked to Patrick about it heading into the final round. I was looking at what he's done, like his rookie year on the PGA Tour last year. He had 4 top tens, including the fall. And I mean, just listen to some of these weekend scores, Rick. At the Corrales Punta Cana Championship, he came in 5th, 66-68 over the weekend. The AT&T Byron Nelson, where he had a share of the lead through 54 holes, finished tied 2nd. He shot 63-65. Over the weekend. The U.S. Open, he finished tied 10th, 73-65 over the weekend. The RSM Classic, 66-65 over the weekend, and 66-67 at PGA National now. I mean, that is phenomenal. And while hasn't put himself in the mix a lot yet, he's proven that when he does, he's not afraid. Regardless of what the scoring condition is or what he, you know, has gained strokes wise in those tournaments, to shoot those scores, you got to play some golf under pressure.
This was his 50th career PGA Tour start, which it seemed like he has played a lot more. I don't know, Greg, if that's just because, you know, we see his name for DFS purposes every single week, or he often gets lumped into the, you know, the Victor Hovland, Matt Wolf, like that national championship team at Oklahoma State. So it's just, I feel like I've thought about Austin Ekeroat for a lot longer than the equivalent of 50 PGA Tour starts. I mean, that's nothing. He's a baby out here.
Yeah. I mean, this is his second season. and it's March. You know, it's early in March. It might have been February when this tournament started. So, I mean, it's a big accomplishment. It's a big deal. And to be able to play the way he did, and this was not Jay. I know we're going to talk a little Jake Knapp, but this is not a Jake Knapp. I'm too nervous to handle this kind of situation today. This was, I'm going to go out here and win. I mean, you think about the overnight, he's got to sleep on a lead, right? Heading into today. And he gets through seven holes. By the way, yesterday he played great too. But I was looking at his proximities today on Monday. And in the first nine holes that he played today, he played 11. But this is the area where he won. In the first nine holes, he hit it inside of 15 feet on six approach shots. And the ones where he didn't was on 11, where he hit it past the water to 49 feet. He missed the green on 14 and made a birdie. And on 15, he hit it to 20 feet, 19 feet, actually. So everything else, it's 9 feet, 12 feet, 6 feet, 6 feet, 7 feet, 11 feet. I mean, he hit his irons right at the flag all day, almost regardless of the trouble that was around there. So he took advantage of some easy conditions, and he just excelled. He put the pressure on everybody else in the field.
It was a weird final round, and that's the phrasing that I want to use, because there was a lot of golf played on Sunday morning, and then there was the weather stoppage. So there were some guys who had played their entirety of their final round, and specifically the final group had not even teed off yet when that weather delay had started. The big mover was Erik van Rooyen, who made birdies on six straight out of the gate. He was 8 under through 10, and then the weather delay kind of stops all momentum. He comes back after that, doesn't play particularly well. He ends up shooting 35, which is 1 under on his second nine. He posts 14 under, and with what you were talking about, Greg, those scoring conditions, 14 under was unlikely to win this golf tournament very early in the day.
Yes, he was hoping for some wind. That's for sure. I didn't get it, which was unfortunate. But boy, Erik van Rooyen is got to be proven to himself that he is legit, a real contender, and has this ability to go crazy for short period, like in a sprint. This guy can just go. I mean, he shoots 28 here in Mexico. I think he shot 28 on the back on the last nine to win. This is an ability that not everybody has on the PGA Tour, and it's really impressive. And he had it going with his iron play, had it going on the greens. I mean, in those first six holes, his longest birdie putt was 13 feet, 6 inches. And that was on the par five third, where, you know, you're up around the green in two. So it was just an unbelievable performance, kind of like Austin Eckroat. In that middle nine, everything was at the flag. The thing is, for EVR, in the first six holes, everything was just a little bit closer. You know, he's making putts under 10 feet for birdie, just piling up the circles, moving his way up this leaderboard. And you have to think, if there was no weather delay, he was just going to keep on going.
The circumstances and the way this played out, you know, EVR essentially posts 14 under. There wasn't, you know, he wasn't able to kind of put that pressure on Austin Eckroat at the same time that Eckroat was playing. That duty went to Minwoo Lee, who also finished at 14 under par in a tie for second. And Minwoo, after getting off to a little bit of a rocky start, birdie on three, birdie on four, gives them both back with a double on five. He makes eagle on 10. He makes birdie on 12. And now he's the one that, with maybe a little bit of good fortune in his direction, maybe a little bit of bad bear trap misfortune in the direction of Austin Eckroat, Minwoo Lee is the one who could contend for this. It doesn't pan out that way, because we already talked about what Eckroat did through the bear trap, and Minwoo played his final six holes here at even par. But this was the guy who was applying the most pressure in the moment.
Yeah, he was within one shot of the lead for a while. You know, he got himself right there in the mix, and there was a point where he thought it was going to be a little battle between Eckroat and Minwoo down the stretch. But sadly, Minwoo ran out of par fives because he did a lot of his heavy lifting this week on the par fives. He played them in 14 under par, which was obviously the best in the field. Through the 10th hole today, so there's only one par five left. So you got 12 total for the week. Through the first 11 par fives, he had made birdie or eagle on all of them. 10 was his third eagle. Right. I mean, he is torching the par fives. Maybe you say Minwoo is munching on the par fives. So by the time you get to the 72nd hole, it doesn't matter in the scope of the tournament. It could have gotten him solo second if he made a birdie there. But that was the strength of Minwoo's game. But ultimately, getting to watch him contend, getting to watch him compete is so fun. It's refreshing. And he has the stuff to be a star personality-wise. I think there's a few areas of his game he's got to clean up because his iron play could be better. You know, the middle two rounds, he hit 8 greens on Friday, 10 greens on Saturday. And in the fourth round, he hit it a little better. Again, no win, but he hit 14 greens, which was great for him. But he's got to clean some of that stuff up, clean up some of the mistakes, because the upside with him is extremely high.
Two more quickies, Greg, then we'll get to the API here. Jake Knapp finished T4 fresh off his win in Mexico. I did not think this was going to be a good spot for Jake Knapp with all the water lurking, and we saw him kind of get loose at times, especially on Sunday in Mexico. But he goes 68, 66, 71, 66, so ties his best round of the week on Sunday. I was impressed with how he kept this golf course in front of him. I was impressed with how he geared down when required. And honestly, we saw a lot of Jake Knapp because he was paired with Rory McIlroy the first couple of days, so he was in featured groups. I left very impressed with Knapp, almost even more so than in Mexico, which is just the perfect spot for him. This I did not think was a great spot for him, and he was still showing us what that game's all about.
When we first started last week, we were putting his round on this golf course,
right?
And it was a complete disaster. But he comes out here this week, and it's all cleaned up, all buttoned up, even though he's playing with Rory McIlroy. I mean, in this final round, when he's got himself in contention, he puts the ball in play off the tee. And for the entire week, he was 13th in this field in driving accuracy. And still 11th in driving distance for all drives. Just really good stuff. And he showed a complete game again. You remember what he did with his short game back in at Mexico. He completely leaned on it. Now, you look at what he did this week with his short game. He's tied 7th. This is not a Florida kid, right? He's from California. This coming to play Bermuda grass without a lot of experience can be difficult. He proved he was able to do that. His bunker play is stellar. I mean, for the year now, year to date, he is 19 for 24 in sand saves. And you just see, he knocks him stiff out of the bunker, long bunker shots, short bunker shots. It is, it's really fun to watch. And he surprised me too, Rick, but in the most pleasant way.
All right. And then what I think is one of the more interesting stories of Sunday was the final group together, and more specifically, Shane Lowry, Greg. You know, both these guys, David Skins, Shane Lowry, shot even par 71s. Lowry, who has had trouble, to put it mildly, closing out events at PGA National, struggled again. The too little, too late. He was never in it. His 71 was his worst round of the week by 4 shots. It's just kind of a bizarre thing. I mean, the golf course played the easiest it did in round 4. I mean, it was 2 shots plus under par, and Shane Lowry with a chance to again go out and get one here, unable to get it done.
Yeah, this was disappointing, and you could see that it was disappointing for him as well. He hit a number of really good approach shots on the front 9 and wasn't able to convert any of the putts. He was leaving them short, wasn't really giving himself a great run at it. And then you slip up and make a couple bogeys, and it's so disheartening. You finally get a nice birdie at 10 and a short miss on 9 as well for birdie, which is so difficult. Then you get one at 10, but you feel like you really needed a three there. And then you hit it in the water off the tee on 11. And and then you come back and knock it stiff at 12. And it just, and then you saw what happened at 15 when he hit it in the water and hit his approach shot from, or hit his third shot from the drop zone and kicked his club. This was frustrating.
He jammed his wedge into the ground and whiffed on the kick, Craig.
You're right.
That's just perfect, you know, couldn't even get the kick done. It was that nothing was going his way. He ends up making double on 15, and it is a T4 for Shane Lowry. So again, congratulations to Austin Eckroat, first time winner on the PGA Tour in his 50th career start, three shot win over Eric Van Rooyen and Minwoo Lee. Had a couple others lurking as well, like Cam Young, KH Lee. So setting up for a great week this week. We're going to turn our attention to the fourth signature event. We're going to go to Bay Hill. There's a lot of great history, a lot of great stats to look at, and we're going to cover that right after a word from our partners.
Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt, and I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to, and Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any US orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
And we're back. Okay, Greg. So hard reset here. We are going to look towards the Arnold Palmer Invitational. We are going to, as we do every week, go and look at the golf course. We are going to go, you know, basically tier by tier, almost player by player. But we've got another signature event. So it is a small field, and Bay Hill, of course, we know, of course, we love. We've had shot link there forever. This should be a good one.
Bay Hill is phenomenal. The whole Florida swing's phenomenal because the golf courses provide such a big challenge. This one in particular is a par 72 that's over, 7,400 yards. It's long, and you have fairways that are, you know, their average width is plenty, but they play so much narrower than they are. You often get firm and fast conditions. I'm not sure it's going to be as fiery as it has been in years past because of weather that we've had in Florida leading up to it, but it could still get quite firm. And then, you know, if you do miss those fairways, the rough is extremely penal. And so you are really, your back's up against the wall right from the tee shot, which is a nice change of pace because often on the PGA Tour, there's not a lot of penalty for hitting it in the rough. There's not a lot of penalty for errancy off the tee. And here at Bay Hill, there definitely is. Not saying that I have a preference one way or the other. I'm just saying it's a change of pace. And
it is. And Josh, if you want to share my screen, we'll start showing my website, rickrungood.com. We've got some data that we can use as some aids here along the way. And when you start running the models, Greg, just straight math, what stats are more correlated to success than other stats? You know, no opinion whatsoever. You see a lot of approach stuff. You also see things like club head speed, because what you talk about, club head speed to me shows up a couple different ways. Obviously, it shows up in driving distance. It shows up in hitting shorter clubs in than your peers. It also shows up, and I think it's more specific to Bay Hill and other places, that thick rough, that penal rough, being able to extract yourself from there, that is a skill that comes with club head speed. So to me, I love it on a week where the math and the eye test line up. And I think this is one of those weeks.
Yes. And, you know, looking at that approach stuff that does rate out to be so important, it's really hard to perform well with your irons from the rough, especially if you don't have the club head speed to match it. Right. The guy, I think of Luke List at the Genesis or Patrick Cantlay at the Genesis, who were able from long distance to hit iron shots out of the rough and stop them on the greens. And there were other players that weren't able to do that. So you do see a separation in ability, and much of that separation is in, well, one, ability with irons, and also club head speed is a huge part of it.
Okay, let's start naming some of these names. We'll go to the cheat sheet here. We've got three golfers on DraftKings this week over $10,000. Scottie Scheffler, $11,300. Rory McIlroy, $10,600. Patrick Cantlay, who you just mentioned, is $10,000 even. Greg, there's probably not a lot of new information that we are going to divulge on Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, or Patrick Cantlay this week. They are who they are. They all... some have smaller samples, some have larger, have all played well at Bay Hill. But we must start making decisions between these three. How do we go about doing that?
You know, one thing that I was surprised to see is that Patrick Cantlay has only played here once.
Yeah, last year.
And it was a T4. You know, so I first jump out of the gate and his name doesn't come to the front of my mind as a Bay Hill guy because he's only played here once. You know, Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy are defending champions, so they obviously make a ton of sense. Patrick Cantlay also may not be known as the kind of driver that Scottie and Rory are, but he has an ability to do what's needed to be done on the golf course, and he can put the ball in the fairway when he needs to. He has plenty of club head speed to handle rough, and I think you can see him even putt pretty well around here. So I'm intrigued by Patrick Cantlay. Very curious in this range as to what the ownership will look like. Mm-hmm. Because other than that, it's just so hard for me to get off of Scottie Scheffler.
How much are you taking into account? There was a question in the chat about this as well. How much are you considering course history? Now, there's a lot of guys, not just these three, but there are other guys as we go down the list that have pretty darn good history. I think this skews pretty sticky. What is your opinion on that year over year performance?
Yeah, it is definitely, again, depending on a couple other things, it's definitely on my radar big time. And it will sway a couple of things. For instance, Scottie Scheffler with all of his struggles on the greens. I have a general philosophy that when you get to Florida, ball strikers rise up. Their putting improves because the greens get a little flatter. There's a little less break to them. And I know they're so fast and they can be tough, but it just seems like this can be a week where a great ball striker has the great putting performance. And that's not true everywhere that's not true on the Poana, right? I look a lot more to short game and putting when you get onto those kind of surfaces than here. So, yeah, I'm looking at course history for sure, because there are some good ball strikers that have struggled here as well, and I'm probably going to stay away from them.
I'm just kind of circling through, you know, some of the histories around here. The Rory McIlroy Bay Hill history is some of the best for any player at any golf course. You can see here it is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight top 15s. That includes a win. His worst finish was a T27 in 2016. This is nearly as good as it gets, Greg. And you now have to look at that with what could only be described as subpar play over his last three. Now that's by McIlroy standards. T66 at Pebble Beach, T24 at Riviera, T21 at PGA National. How do we reconcile struggles, quote, again, I'm quoting, struggles coming in with that amount of elite performance?
Two things that I'm cautious about. One, every tournament he's played in this year has been marked by a big mistake. Plenty of opportunities at Bay Hill for a big mistake. That worries me. He was ice cold on the greens at the Honda. That worries me, although a whole lot less. This was the event in 2018 where he gained like 10 strokes putting.
Yeah.
But he started working with Brad Faxon, and that thing kind of took off, and they're still working together. And Fax says they're not working on anything because he's putting well. So I would not be surprised to see an adjustment out of Rory. The one thing I worry about is just these big numbers that keep seeming to pop up. But is that worry bigger than the worry for Scotty and the putter? Like, who do you think, Rick, has more win equity between those two? Right. It's a crazy question.
My gut says Rory wins more. But I think that Scotty top 10s more, which is weird. So to put it this way, the Scotty thing is, listen, we've spent so much oxygen on it. It's crazy. I get it. He was objectively bad at Riviera. You know, he lost strokes on approach for one of the, I think, the first or second time in 19 months. He lost another 4 strokes putting. It was the 4th best field that we've seen, and he still finished T10. Like, that's got to be as bad as it gets, right? But now he's been unable to cross the finish line. Rory, when he gets in it, seems to be a better closer. I just don't think he has gotten into it as frequently as Scotty has as of late.
Yeah. And that's why it's so hard for me to stay off of Scotty, because he's going to be in it. You know that. And I expect an uptick in putting performance from him. So I lean Scotty over Rory. But I guess before we move on, you got to click a button, Rick. Are you like 50-50 split in a big contest? Are you leaning Scotty or Rory? Where are you?
I would lean Scotty here. I would be about like if you made me, so if you said, okay, Rick, you're gonna play 1,000 lineups and you have to be, you know, 60, you have to have one of these guys in each one of them. I would probably get Scotty into 60 and get Rory into 40 of them.
Okay. So you'd have 900 left. I get your point. I get your point. I'm just teasing you.
Yeah, I mean it's they're that expensive for a reason. The 9K range here is Hovland at 99, Xander Schauffele at 98, Ludvig Åberg at 95, Jordan Spieth at 94. Then we round it out with Burns, that's Sam at 9300, Max Homa at 9200, Colin Morikawa at 91, and Justin Thomas at $9,000 flat. Again, Greg, some pretty decent history in here. These are much more palatable, and you could conceivably play a couple of these guys.
Yes, and they're good enough to start your lineup here. If you are concerned enough about Scotty and Rory and you don't want to play Cantlay for whatever reason, you could start a lineup here easily. So I think the first place to go, this feels like the next guy to end up with a great history at Bay Hill, and it's Ludvig. Right? I'm not sure how you stay away from this guy on this golf course. He does have one start here. It's a T24 finish. That was last year. He was an amateur at that time. It just feels like with his ability off the tee, this is the kind of place where he will excel.
Yeah, his biggest weapon is magnified here. And the problem for everybody else is his next best weapon and his next best weapon are not far behind his best weapon, which is like super scary stuff. We've talked about it a lot that, you know,
and they're magnified and magnified.
Yeah. And since he's turned pro, he's basically the third best player in the world. It's him, Rory and Scotty in some combination. And I agree with you. I mean, at this rate, he might play here 25 times, 30 times, who knows what it is, but this is probably one of the better on paper fits for him. And just the one start, like you said, as an amateur started to show that.
And then look at what he's done on the greens over his last 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. He's gained basically a shot or more in every tournament for four straight weeks. And it's looked bad on the greens.
Yeah, remember how many round recaps have we gone through and said Ludwig missed another 2 foot 11 inch putt today?
Yeah. And I am convinced that is Poana when I watch him. I think that's a product, which is why I believe you see the strokes gain numbers the way they are. It's a product of Poana, in my opinion. Coming here to the Bermuda, I think you see an uptick there for him as well. So he's my first choice in this range, as strange as it sounds. But I think our beautiful boy is also very much in the conversation here. Been quiet so far. But it feels like this is a week where he kind of comes out of hibernation.
Yeah, he's been quiet. He's been working through some stuff. We saw him take off, skip an event earlier this year to kind of continue progress. He looked better and seemed more optimistic at Riviera, and that showed up in the stats as well. He kind of broke that little slump, Greg, where he was struggling on his approach play. He had, you know, lost multiple strokes on approach in three straight, which is unheard of. I think it's the only time in his career he'd ever done it, and he kind of broke that, which I think is a good sign. When I spoke to him, he seemed optimistic about where he was trending, and then this is a place that, again, that should really allow him to just uncork all of his best products.
And you look even further, the last 2 years here, you have a T2 in 22, a T10 in 23. Now this year, in theory, you have an improved short game on top of that. He's putted well here the last 2 years. I just think there's a lot of evidence, predictive evidence to show that this is going to be a turnaround week, you know, a get right spot for Victor Hovland. And you go back to the philosophy, right? This is a driver's golf course. There are a few people I would take, you know, ahead of him when it comes to just off the tee performance.
And I am going to be interested to see, you know, yes, the obviously the great history here for Victor, but 2024 hasn't gotten off to a great start for him. I do wonder what the community will do with him, with, you know, the big boys in the 10K range. He's the most expensive in the 9K. Do you get skipped over for Ludwig, or do you get, like, I'm interested to see just kind of how ownership in general shakes out over, especially the high-end 9K guys, which I think are going to be more difficult to get into lineups.
Yes. Also, they could get kind of spread out, right?
Yeah.
Because you got Xander there, who certainly hasn't done anything wrong and no. Seems to contend. We got to make some decisions here, so he's not on my list. But it's not. There's not really any reason for it. So I could see the industry going pretty heavy on Xander, or just as heavy on Xander as they do on Hovland or Oberg.
The bottom of the 9K range are some guys that I'm excited about as well. You know, Justin Thomas, I will give him a pass for what was a very, very ugly two rounds at Riviera. I'm not even going to try to guess what happened, but that looks like an outlier compared to his last 6 months. And then Max Homa, Greg, you know, he doesn't have that elite course history that some of these other guys have. But it's very good. It's four trips here, no finish worse than T24, T10, T17, T14 along the way. And then kind of looking at what he's done recently, You know, he hasn't played his, he hasn't had his best stuff, but even without it, T16 at Riviera, we're starting to kind of get in the right direction. I don't mind rolling out Max here and just thinking we're going to be a hair early on him.
He's shown over the past couple, over the last little bit, maybe 8 months or so, that he can grind, right? He can really grind it out, especially with his improved short game. The one concern I have is if he's not hitting it great, I still think you need to give yourself some opportunities. Yeah. And he hasn't been giving himself the opportunities. He's done a great job hanging on in the, on the tough day, shooting one over, you know, when it could have been five, which is a great sign. But there's going to have to be a little bit of offense early in this tournament, in my opinion, in order to end up near the top of the leaderboard at the end of the week.
Yeah,
and I'm thrilled about his defense. I don't know where we are with his offense. So you would be going early on him. I don't have a problem with it, but it's probably not my favorite play in the range.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you from the sense of like there are, and I kind of was trying to get to this argument a little bit earlier on my YouTube channel, is like Rory and Scotty have 19 different ways to get to the top of the board that they just have so many paths. Guys like Homa and Colin Morikawa here don't have as many paths, right? If Colin doesn't play out of the fairway, don't look for him, right? Don't look for him near the top. And I think there are a couple of ways that things could go wrong for Max as well. So it's just like those paths to the top of the board get a little bit more narrow.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. I feel like Jordan Spieth, before we move on to the next range, I think Jordan Spieth needs a little conversation.
Aren't you upset that he got DQ'd from his last start?
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm very upset about it.
Oops, I think I clicked Travis Spieth. Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, Jordan Spieth. Great record here. Mm-hmm. Kind of surprising.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Well, so you know, this kind of rings in my head when you talk about the paths to victory. And he just knows how to score. And when you know how to score, it's easier to make pars than birdies, right? Like he can make a bunch of pars. And he doesn't have to play well to make them. It could be an exciting 18-par round. It's like Phil Mickelson in the U.S. Open. You would never expect Phil Mickelson to have success in a U.S. Open, yet he has six runner-up, like he's in contention every year. It doesn't make any sense in his heyday. I think there's a little bit of that going on with Jordan. But what I like is he seems to be driving it a whole lot better. And that could be a really good sign for Jordan here at Bay Hill.
Yeah, he is driving it better, both longer and maybe a hair more accurately, but the stats are definitely in his favor. You know, we were obviously joking around about the DQ. Correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, that was Friday night. So he played two rounds and he was T20 going into the weekend. I mean, think about if he just moves up the leaderboard, finishes T9, and has the back-to-back, you know, fourth place finishes in his two trips here, how much we would be foaming at the mouth about Jordan Spieth this week.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I understand your point now. It helps with the pricing significantly. But he was much closer to the – he fell apart on Friday afternoon to end up T20. It was looking much better than that for much of that day. I think there's a little magic in the hat for Jordan this week.
A little magic in the hat. I like that. Okay, well, we are going to continue this conversation. We're back to the regular type of pricing. So we're only going down to that 6K range. So what we'll do is we'll hit the 8s, the 7s, and the 6s, see if we can find some value in this field. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
And we're back. The 8K range, Greg, plenty of big names. Will Zalatoris at 8,900. Tommy Fleetwood, Cameron Young, not Carson, Matt Fitzpatrick, Wyndham Clark, and then the bottom of that range, Hideki Matsuyama, fresh off his victory, Tom Kim, Jason Day, Sahith Theegala, Russell Henley, and Sung J.M. What are we doing here?
This is a tough one because there's a lot of really good options, right? So hard to kind of decipher your way through. My three favorites, Will Zalatoris, Cam Young, and surprisingly, Sahith Theegala.
Wow. Okay. Well, we definitely, so one and two, Zalatoris, Cam Young, I am with you wholeheartedly. So we'll circle back on those. I would like to be sold on Sahith here. Let's talk about him.
All right. I think you're seeing a guy that can handle more difficult golf courses a little better than he used to be able to. I think he's gotten a lot more consistent off the tee. I think he has enough speed. I think he has enough ability coming out of the rough. And you're starting to see some routine high finishes. Also, if you look at his record here, he finished T14 here last year. And the short game was something that kind of suffered, something that cost him. But his short game is really quite good when you watch it, regardless of what the statistics say. The guy can get up and down from anywhere. And so this is a little bit of a reach as far as, you know, what his recent form has looked like and what his style looks like. But I'm wondering if this is a Jordan Spieth kind of situation where it's not a great fit, but it works for him. And I think it will.
I don't have anything to add because I never get him right. And I see a golfer who has a lot more top 20s, a lot more high-end finishes. I'm talking fifth or better. And a guy who, to your point, Greg, has indeed definitely gotten more consistent. I'm not sure what a good Sahith course is anymore, because I think that when he's playing well, he's in contention. And when he's not, he's not. And I'm not sure course matters as much anymore.
It could be a good, really good point, right? His game is good enough to compete anywhere, but it doesn't always compete everywhere.
Right. Sometimes he just doesn't have it. And it doesn't matter if it's the best course in the world for him or not.
Right. And sometimes he does. The other thing, Rick, is speaking of playing a little bit of offense, I don't think Sai is going to be afraid if he gets a Thursday morning tee time or Thursday afternoon to go out and make birdies. I don't think he's afraid. He's not going to go in there and say, okay, this is a hard course. I got to play defense and I'm even par is good. I wouldn't be surprised if he shoots a 64 and then tries to hang on the rest of the week. I wouldn't surprise me if he has a great round in this tournament that keeps him near the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, no, it's a good call. The other two that we agreed on here, so we can go relatively quickly on, Will Zalatoris being 8,900 feels awesome. I mean, he is fully on. The last two courses that we saw him were Riviera T2, Farmers T13. He gained in all four strokes gain categories in both of those, Greg. Both of those golf courses are places where you have to hit a lot of long irons. So is this one. I mean, this is a potential major championship contender on a difficult course that he should be able to separate himself from the field at $8,900.
Yes, and extremely excited to play. He's fresh, right, looks healthy. The golf swing is impressive. It feels like he's way too cheap. So the one concern is ownership. Does he become chalk? Has he shown enough to the rest of the community that he's back? That's something I'm going to be watching for.
Probably the only thing that might be the saving grace is Cam Young, who's 8,700. Hideki is fresh off the win, and Matt Fitzpatrick has great history here. So it might be held. The only thing that would also help is if Sungjae was playing better, because that would certainly help as well. But yeah, that's interesting. We'll see as the week goes on if everybody is just running to get all the Will Zalatoris they can handle. Here's the third guy that we referenced here, Cam Young. You want to talk about a little bit of comebacks, you know, sophomore slump for Cam Young. I think, Greg, he's breaking out of it. The results are starting to pile up again.
Yeah, they are. And it still feels and looks almost frustrating, which is, a really good sign for weeks to come. This isn't him playing his heart out and losing, right? He's frustrated with his play, and he's finishing T4. That's a really good sign. So you're starting to see him drive it a little better. You're starting to see fewer of the terrible shots. And I think you're starting to see him get things together on the greens, which is a really good sign. And again, he's one of those guys like Rory and Scotty. And I named somebody else as well. Hovland. Ludvig, who I think is going to get a uptick in putting this week. Wouldn't surprise me if that was Cam Young as well. I do feel like he's very chalky, which I'm going to keep my eye on.
Yeah, we'll keep our eye on. There was something else I was going to say about him, but I don't remember what it was. I think I was just going to say, I think he got a little bit of a reset in 2024 because his calendar year has been solid, and it's good to see. Anybody else in this 8K range? We were in agreement wholeheartedly on two. You threw me Sahith, which I think is interesting. I'm not as excited about anybody else here. I wish Sungjae was playing a little bit better. Fitzpatrick is always a little bit tough with the great history. So I'm not super thrilled about the rest of these guys, but is there someone else we should talk about?
No, I'm not overly excited about anybody else either. But like I said, if I'm watching that ownership and it feels like it's a little too heavy on Zalatoris or Young, Tommy Fleetwood would probably be the pivot for me.
Yeah, that's a good call. So I was just looking at his Arnold Palmer stuff, and it's actually probably a lot better than most people would.
Yeah, it's very good.
Expect here. So let's see. He's got 1, 2, 3 top tens, another T20. He's only missed one cut here. Yeah, a lot of solid finishes, almost exclusively living inside the top 25.
Right. And again, this is a complete game, and this golf course requires a complete test. So it seems like he's been driving the ball really well. He's going to be able to get the ball in play off the tee. And he has a good enough short game to get up and down and scramble his way when he needs to. So, yeah, I think complete players, which is probably the Matt Fitzpatrick model here, just rely on everything working at the same time. That's kind of with Fleetwood and Fitzpatrick. I feel like they're capable of that. And I just lean a little towards Fleetwood this week.
The 7K range, that's JT Poston, Matthew Pavon at the top, the middle, Adam Scott, Shane Lowry. The bottom of that range, Christian Bezuidenhout, Luke List, with plenty of options in between, Greg. So where are we spending our funds here?
I wrote down so many names in this range.
Me too. Right?
I almost want to make a lineup just in the 7K range.
Well, I'll tell you what. So 7 times 6 is what? 42-ish, but you know, get a couple $7,500 guy, you're up to 43, 44. The optimal lineups the last couple of weeks have been no more than $47,000. You might be able to just hit the stone optimal lock by living in the 7K range.
If I read you this lineup based on you are brand new to the PGA Tour this year. Okay? You just tuned it. You just found out what it is this year. You know nothing about it. But you've watched every event this year. And I said, all right, we're going to have Matthew Pavone, Chris Kirk, Ben Ahn, Jake Knapp, Adam Scott, and Luke List in my lineup. It'd be a rock star lineup.
You'd be like, wow, that's like 1 through 6 of the FedEx Cup standings. This is amazing.
Yes. Incredible.
And you might not be wrong.
And all of those guys to me are extremely playable. And I want to get as, I feel like I'm crazy, but I want to get as many of them in as I can. Yeah, Matthew Pavone is so underrated.
Yes. Yes. This goes back to, so his 5 starts on the PGA Tour include a win, a third, a seventh, and kind of he was in it at PGA National until like a couple of bad holes late and finished T28. Then you go back into his DP World Tour stuff. You get even more top tens. I might've said this last week, there is a timeline in which Pavone wins the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, has a couple of things go right at, like, he's a couple swings away from having an unreal year, and it's already been phenomenal.
Yes. And he could add more to it this year. I mean, you don't think of him as long enough to compete here. You may not. You may just have no idea. Right. But he's not going to do it the way Rory is going to do it. But at the same time, he won the Farmers Insurance Open this year.
Correct.
Which is a long, narrow golf course with thick rough that he won there. So he's absolutely capable, and I haven't seen any dip in form at all. I think every area of his game is rock solid. He loses strokes around the green, but he gets everything up and down. You know, so I'm not concerned about any part of his game. I'm all in on Pavone again this week.
We mentioned Jake Knapp in the quick cognizant recap that we did. His stat line from Mexico and Cognizant are almost identical. You know, he was a little better ball striker in Mexico, a little better putter. That's it. I mean, this is, and also it's like the same thing he did at Farmer. Is Jake Knapp super legit?
Yeah.
But like super PGA Tour legit.
Yes. He's PGA Tour legit. This doesn't look like, I mean, are you blinded by the tempo? Maybe. But this doesn't look like it's a hard or extraordinary thing. You watch David Skins last week, and he's playing great. It feels like everything is going right.
Yeah.
You know, with Jake Knapp, it doesn't. It's like Cam Young. You feel like, wow, that could have been a whole lot better. And those are the kind of guys that can develop a ton of consistency because their disappointments are still successes on the tour. And like, again, look at Jake Knapp's stat lines. You would tell me the weakness in his game is a short game. I would tell you that the strength of his game is a short game. It's incredible. Fairway lies on Bermuda. Fairway lies on maybe in Mexico. What was that? The Pass Palom. Maybe it was a little easy. But he comes and does the same thing on the Bermuda greens at PGA National. Some really sticky, tough stuff. He knows how to do it. He's legit. This game will travel.
Yeah, I've been just so impressed with what he's been able to do. He's $7,600 this week. I'm just mostly buying Adam Scott from now through the Masters, and I'm just going to see what happens. He's been playing great golf, Greg. We're going to get a run of decent spots for him coming up here. So the next month or so is Adam Scott month. I'm happy to roll with that.
Especially here, he has cleaned up the driver big time. From the last couple of years, it's been a little shaky, and Adam Scott seems to be back to the Adam Scott of old with the driver, and you can add a putter that's not a problem anymore. Could argue it's a strength. So yeah, Adam Scott, I'm writing his name down every week too.
Where else do you want to go? We've got a defending champion, Kurt Kitayama, who hasn't played as well recently. We've got Eric Cole, who was the highest owned golfer last week and missed the cut. Where else can we go here in the sevens?
I think I want to go down a little bit. There are two guys, not Kitayama, but between Luke List and Harris English, those two guys, I really like both of them. I'm not sure where to go. My guess is English probably has a little more value and you pay for it as well.
English has been interesting, seemingly healthy again. And his 2024, I'll just read them all to you. T14, T10, T64, that was Farmers, 76, that was Pebble Beach, that was the three rounds. Then he goes to Phoenix and finishes T17, seventh at Riviera. We have talked about when he's at his best, it's this well-rounded, plays better on difficult golf courses. His last three trips to Bay Hill, runner-up, 26th, 9th. I think I really like this.
Yeah, this is healthy Harris, mm-hmm. right? Now, so I'm all in on that. It seems like there are a couple of guys on golf courses like this that you can comfortably like auto lock, and they're likely underpriced. And it's the two guys to me are Will Zalatoris and Harris English. Hmm. Their games, more than anybody else in these fields, their games rise as the golf course gets difficult. Scotty and Rory, their games are just always at that level. So there's not the rise, but these guys seem to just completely step up. So I'm with you. Harris is a really strong play at 7,300.
Here's the Luke List profile, just so we can put a bow on that as well. Great driver, played great at Riviera, ended up finishing T2 there. We've seen him find success not only at Riv, but at you know, Farmers in the past, which is another golf course, kind of asks you some similar questions as this week. If you're talking about club head speed, Greg, if you're talking about you know, the bad putters getting a little bit better on flat Bermuda, that's kind of the profile here.
Yeah, and I'm thinking again of what he did out of the rough at Genesis, and I'm just like, this guy was unbelievable out of the rough from 220. And I've loved what he's done on the greens. His course history has been bad the last 2 years, but the putting was unbelievably bad. And he played well here a couple times. He has a T7 and a T10 and putted well. T17 in his first ever start and putted well. So I think there's a lot of upside for Luke List, who seems to be underpriced to me this week.
Let's find some real value in this $6,000 range. Starts with our most recent winner, Austin Eckroat and Emiliano Grillo, both at 6,900. Nick Taylor, Patrick Rogers in the middle at 65. And our minimum price golfers for this week, CT Pan, David Ford, Grayson Murray, and Webb Simpson. So, Greg, how do we want to go about rounding out the bottom of the board?
Why don't we go to all the way to the bottom? Okay. I think there's a min price guy that you can play.
Ah, okay.
You can definitely guess who.
I mean, CT?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I could go with CT Pan this week.
I mean, is his path just smash every single fairway and then he'll generally be fine and he's got a great game from there on in?
Yeah, he's going to have to just be hot off the tee. Which is unlikely because his driving has been really poor. But I do feel like his play has been better than min price.
Sure. I mean, he finished third in Mexico and 28th last week. That alone is better than min price. And when you look at...
He played terrible in the last round. Shot even.
No offense, Webb Simpson. No offense. I mean, I guess Grayson Murray's won recently. But like David Ford, who is David Ford?
So CT Pan is underpriced.
I agree.
I don't like what I see off the tee, but I like what I see with as far as confidence is concerned. He's dealt with injuries some wrist injuries. Perhaps he's healthy and he could open up a lot of space in your lineup, even though all my guys are in the 7K range anyway. So I don't need the space. Right. But what do you say? We get a little more realistic here.
Sure.
I think the guy in this range is, I think it's Emiliano Grillo.
Wow. Okay. I'm not far off. He would have probably have been the third-ish name, but I kind of thought I was high on him.
On Grillo.
Yeah.
I just have a sense that everything has been so-so for him. I don't think anything has been bad. I love the way that he drives the ball. I think there's a very easy path where he pounds fairways. And I love what he's done on the greens this year.
I've loved what he's done on the greens this year, meaning like the last 12 months.
Yes.
I mean, here he is. This is the Players' Championship of last year. He has lost a handful of times. He had hit the little skids here, but this is, you know, we can't even joke about him being team no putt anymore. I mean, he's genuinely a good putter.
A good putter.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good sign. And you look at what he's done. He's putted well here too. Although last year, okay, this was the thing. I was looking at this morning.
Last year was one that broke his brain.
Last year, he lost 9 strokes putting.
Yeah.
And finished T39.
I know. Yeah.
So like that's going to be a whole lot better. So
did we find out that he was playing with like a bent putter or something? That was Keith Mitchell one year.
Yes. I don't think that was Grillo.
It was just a bad putter.
But he figured, what did he do after that?
That's what broke his brain. So that after that, he hit rock bottom and that's the moment. So since then he has lost strokes putting like 5 times in the last year. I seriously like snapped his brain. He just hit rock bottom and said,
he bounced off the rock right up to the top of the
correct. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So I love that. I love that upside. And I do believe in his driving ability, and general ball striking ability. His finishes have been rather, you know, average, but I think his play has been better than that.
I had him probably third for me. The other two are just probably less exciting because they're the guys that I think they got in because of their finishes last week. But if not, it's EVR who's now gone runner up and eighth in his last two. And since his win in Mexico, he's played great. And then to have Minwoo Lee at $6,600 with the way that he drives it, coming off the runner up finish last week, you know, we already talked about these guys a little bit in the recap. They're just too low.
You're right. Now with I love Van Rooyen here. I love the way he's been playing. Minwoo still worries me a little bit. See his record here? Doesn't concern you?
No, it does. But I mean, he's $6,600. Yeah. He has some elite skill sets, and he has been, he's been better. I'd have to pull this, but like major championship signature events, kind of tougher fields, he's been a little bit better.
Last year.
I just think it's too low.
I can buy that. I just don't love, his game. I don't love the fit. Maybe, which could be wrong. But I like Van Rooyen. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So there's some decent names in here too. I mean, it's a signature event, right? So you've got Nick Taylor here. You've got Cam Davis here. So you could conceivably, I think it's pretty easy to make lineups this week, especially because of that 7K range that we talked about, the options that you have there. I haven't started building lineups yet, but I do not envision having much of an issue.
No, well, there are issues, but it's not like finding a reason to play somebody. It's the fading of guys that's really hard.
And this is another one of the top 50 and ties plus anybody within 10 shots signature event,
which I think is a fine combination.
Yeah.
We need a little cut.
Memorial will be the the other one that does that.
Which makes sense.
Okay. Greg, anything else before we get out of town?
I love the Florida swing. Really looking forward to Bay Hill. I know we got a lot of action coming up this week, and I can't wait to be a part of it.
There are two PGA Tour events. There's a Korn Ferry event. There is a European Tour event. LIV is on. The Senior Tour is on. This is like a golf eclipse. You rarely get between those tours like six events or seven events across six tours or whatever. No, I think it's six events across those five tours. That's hard to do.
Total eclipse of the sun.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, a lot of golf to watch. I know I'll be watching API all weekend, and I can't wait.
Tuesday, we will be back for the First Cut Mega Preview Pod, where we'll do more storylines. We'll do our best bets, our one-and-done selections, round-by-round recaps Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We are going to rock and roll through Florida all week long, and then, hey, next week, too. For now, big thanks to producer Josh for all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there, Greg Ducharme. You can find him at The Real GFD, and you can find me at Rick Rungood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.